It's time for What's Up with Steve Abel from the Green Party.
Ah, te marie, Steve. Kei te pehea koe?
Kei te pai. Kei te pehea koe?
Kei te taiatea ho. I'm a little bit nervous about David Seymour saying that he wants to pull us out of the Paris Climate Agreement.
Yeah, it's dodgy, isn't it?
Mm. It is. It feels not quite right.
I thought some of his arguments for it was that it's somehow a burden to farmers, or, you know, puts an undue burden on the economy, are extraordinary in the context of the impact that climate change has on farmers. You know, farmers are on the front line of the extreme weather impacts, the droughts, the wildfires, the floods, and the biggest threat to food production globally this century is climate change. So, like, that's exactly why we have the Paris Agreement, because we've got to get down our emissions so that we're not threatening the viability of life for people and all the other species.
Mm, it feels as though his priorities are just a bit all over the show, isn't they?
I think he rightly sees action on climate change as a barrier to free market exploitation of nature, and he wants to get any such barrier out of the way, which is also why he's against Te Tiriti o Waitangi.
Christopher Luxon has come out against Seymour on this, and he said we're not leaving Paris.
Yeah.
And he agrees with what you've said pretty much about how it would punish our and hurt our farmers. Are you worried at all about David Seymour's position on this if Christopher Luxon is quite staunch in not leaving Paris?
Yeah, I mean, I think the interesting thing is that they have an elegant dance here that they can do as the coalition, because in practice, the Luxon government is doing everything it can against Paris. It's not taking serious action on climate change. It's increasing emissions through removing protections for the environment that allow an increase in dairy intensity, which is already happening in Canterbury. It's not, you know, funding all the things that would actually get our emissions down. It's got rid of the clean car discount. It's building more roads. So Luxon gets to look like he's upholding this principle of doing action on climate change, while this government is going exactly in the opposite direction, reopening oil and gas exploration, doing more coal mining. So I kind of, in a cynical way, think maybe they get to play both sides of the coin. And in fact, Luxon says he believes in Paris, but in action, he doesn't.
Mm. So you think they've got a bit of a good cop, bad cop thing going on?
That's it.
Mm, interesting. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with this. I mean, so you feel as though we'll stay within the Paris Agreement, but we're not honouring it well enough at current?
Yeah, I mean, none of this government's strategies and policies are a serious expression of a commitment to action on climate change. Paris is a framework to achieve that, and if we were serious about that, we'd be doing a whole lot of things differently. So, and we proved with our kind of green industrial policy that, for example, a government could be investing in Central North Island timber processing rather than letting all these mills close down, which are actually a way of doing value-added job creation in a renewable industry based on Central North Island forestry. They're letting those closures happen at the same time as they're not bringing in our biggest emitting sector, the dairy industry, into the emissions trading scheme. They're keeping them out. You know, they're allowing more oil and gas exploration. They're getting rid of all the environmental protections and the Resource Management Act, so that, you know, we will actually increase our emissions over time on that trajectory. And so you have to ask, how committed are you to this problem? And I don't think if we judge them by their actions rather than their words, that we can credibly say that they care about climate change.
Mm. Okay, speaking of sort of moves from the government that are potentially not great for climate change, I thought we could catch up a little bit about what's happening with the Marine and Coastal Area, or Takutai Moana Act, because, I mean, this has got a long history, and it sort of began, the government's actions on this began in 2023. Could you give us like a brief overview of what's been happening with the appeals that they're making to this?
Yeah, so basically, and to jump back a little bit, the Foreshore and Seabed Act 2004 was the original sort of confiscation that was deeply controversial, because enacted under the Clark Labor government. The 2011 Marine and Coastal Area Act was an agreement with the Key government and Te Pāti Māori, who were in government with Key then, to rectify the extent of that confiscation that happened in 2004. It still created this narrow framework and this kind of hoop that iwi Māori had to jump through to prove their customary marine title, which is kind of a given if you think about it. Of course, iwi Māori have been using the marine coastal environment since the first arrival of, Polynesian explorers to this country. And so it's still a narrow hoop that Māori are forced to go and jump through to prove that they have customary marine title, but it was some sort of resolution. And the core of it was it said that no one owns the marine coastal environment, which is from the high tide mark to the 12 nautical mile limit. It doesn't belong to the Crown, it doesn't belong to anyone, and there's a space there for Māori to claim that they have customary title. Customary title gives them the right to refuse consents or to have some say in significant commercial activity in that environment, right? Now, that is something that commercial fishers or oil and gas drillers don't want. They don't want to have to deal with the local iwi or hapu in that marine coastal environment if they want to do some sort of commercial exploitation. The appeal court made a decision which expanded the scope of definition in favour of Māori. This government had a knee-jerk reaction and said, we're going to amend the MACA Act, Marine Coastal Environment Area Act, and make it tighter again and return to its original intent. Christopher Finlayson, who was the minister at the time in 2011, said, it's absolutely not a return to its original intent. It's totally foolish. It's terrible for race relations. It undoes a lot of what we've achieved in terms of Māori-Crown relations in recent years. So it's been totally lambasted. The Waitangi Tribunal have come out and slammed it. And the other thing was it preempted the Supreme Court finding on it because it jumped in the middle of the process because it came in after the appeal court. The Supreme Court actually reined in the appeal court's findings. That was another opportunity for Paul Goldsmith to sort of gently back away from the embarrassment and say, okay, well, you know, it's clarified it, but he's persevered. And for me, that is consistent with this government's efforts at every level to undermine the expression of iwi Māori, tēnā tiritonga, undermine te tiriti, attack Māori in all quarters, and this is another example of it. And one specific conversation that was captured between Shane Jones and Paul Goldsmith in the fishing industry was Goldsmith said, we're going to reduce Māori access to customary marine title from 100% to 5%.
So I'm a little, I'm a little confused as to why. I mean, obviously it's caused the Waitangi Tribunal to conduct an urgent inquiry upon all of these changes in 2023. So that's obviously a red flag for the changes alignment with Te Tiriti o Waitangi. But I'm confused as to how that can happen and then the Supreme Court can let the government go ahead with this, or the government still won that Supreme Court case. That seems like a bit of a contradiction.
Yeah, fully. So the thing that a more sober-minded minister would have done is to hold off and wait for the Supreme Court decision. After the appeal decision, then just hold your breath, wait to see what the Supreme Court says. He had a knee-jerk reaction and said, we're going to change the Act. The Parliament is sovereign, so it can change any law. That was the error.
Right.
Sorry.
Okay. And so if the bill goes through, it'll obviously have some pretty drastic impacts for Māori and their customary rights to the foreshore and seabed. Where is the bill sitting at the moment? Is it going to be read and voted on shortly?
Yeah, it's basically coming back to the House soon. And this is exactly the most recent occurrence in this, is the opportunity the minister had to actually say, well, now the Supreme Court's made a call on this, we don't have to proceed with the amendments. That would have been the right thing to do. But he's just pressing on bullheadishly. And there's no way to have anything but a cynical view of why, because they really want to rein in any extent to which iwi Māori can get in the way of commercial exploitation. And particularly when they're wanting to have seabed mining in Taranaki or oil and gas exploration or a big expansion of fish farming. All those things are potentially jeopardised by local iwi saying, hang on a minute, we don't want that here because it's going to do this harm to the environment, or that's going to undermine, you know, our expression of Te Naranga Te Ratanga of these waters. So my view of it is that the reason for them reining in those treaty rights is because they see it as a barrier to free market exploitation of the marine coastal environment. And that's why Jones and Seymour and Luxon all kind of line up and agree on this, because their sort of ideological orientation is towards the principle of private property rights.
Not very tika, is it?
It is terrible for the cohesion of our nation. Like, if we want to move towards unity and te tira to unity as a nation, which is the promise of our founding agreement, then we have to uphold Te Naranga Te Ratanga. And that is the way to have a cohesive nation. And this government is doing all the things in the wrong direction and causing fundamental division.
Right. Just very briefly before we let you go, I do want to touch on these environmental activists that have been arrested after spending 3 weeks in a coal bucket on the west coast at the Stockton mine. Do you want to tell us a little bit about this?
Heroes, those guys. Rach Andrews and Tamati Tupkakis. They did 3 weeks in coal buckets, which is no easy task. They're 80 metres off the ground. In the middle of winter, and they had constant sirens running. They had a helicopter fly down a couple of times. They had somebody firing. Initially, I thought it was shotguns. It might have been a bird scarer, but they had all this intimidation going on. I just wanted to note that those activists exist in a long, proud, and successful tradition of people who've stood in defence of wild nature in Aotearoa, New Zealand. From the Puriura forest occupation to the Charleston forest occupation. Those two examples led to the protection, significant protection of native forests from being logged in those instances. And here it's about defending this magnificent Denniston Plateau from being mined. If you look at images of the Stockton mine, which is a plateau adjacent to Denniston, you see it is Mordor-like landscape, totally annihilated. And the Denniston Plateau is next that Bathurst, the Australian mining company, have in their sights. It's a fast-track application, and this government are hell-bent on opening up these sorts of mining operations. But Denniston is an absolute jewel in the crown. It's this extraordinary kind of limestone escarpment ecology with these bonsai trees and geckos and great spotted kiwi, and it's just a magnificent one place on earth type environment that we mustn't let be destroyed for coal, which we know we need to stop extracting and burning. So I just salute those activists who've put their lives on the line to go and defend that place, and we need to make sure the Denniston mine doesn't proceed.
Yeah, it's interesting. Resources Minister Shane Jones has said that the reality is that police just have to deal with whatever trespass issues arise, but it's sort of, I mean, we're just going to see more and more of this, aren't we, in response to fast-track provisions and all sorts of, I mean, the Takutai Moana Act as well, changes to that. We're just going to see more and more protest activations.
Absolutely, I think that's right. And my sort of call on Minister Jones is to be cautious with his dehumanising language around environmental defenders. He refers to people as malevolent tapeworms and the like. And people sort of laugh at that stuff, but actually one of the more nasty things that happened down there on the west coast during their coal bucket occupation was two van loads of Te Tai Potini on west coast Polytech students went up there to visit Denniston, and overnight in the afternoon that they left their vans behind, both of the vans were arsoned with their gear inside, and that's the kind of sort of thuggery that can be engendered by dehumanising language towards other members of our community. So political leaders need to be careful about the way they refer to members of our community who might be at risk of that sort of aggression and intimidation. Because these are things that we have to hold dear to as a country, the principle that we can disagree, but we do it peacefully.
Right. Thank you very much for your time today, Steve. It's been an absolute pleasure, and we'll catch up with you next month. Thanks.
Amazing.
Steve.
Thanks so much for having me.
Kia kite. Bye.
Kia kite.
That was What's Up with Steve Abel from the Green Party.